Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Dammit. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me in studio, very happy to have Ellen Rogan, who is not just a financial advisor. She's an abundance activist. Okay, first of all, I love that title, and a co-author of the book Picture Your Prosperity. I'm excited to have you here. Welcome to the program, Ellen.
Oh, I am so excited to be here with you. Thank you.
So since you have a money head, right? Now, let's just say that's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm guessing you're good with money.
Yes.
Thank God, since you're a financial advisor and everything. Why do you think, I think the energy behind money is very spiritual, and some people think I'm silly for that, but I do believe that people have a block about money, whether they feel that they, are worthy of it, or if they, might mess it up. I don't know what it is, but do you agree that there is energy attached to money and that people have blocks about it?
Oh, 100% agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just think about it, it's kind of like dieting. If all it took was for people to spend less than they earn, no one would have credit card debt, mm-hmm. and everyone would be calm. No one would be freaking out and selling at the bottom of the market. But that's not the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. We attach all sorts of meaning to money.
Right. Exactly.
Love, security, power, all sorts of different things.
So you talk a lot about the sort of the vision board mentality of putting your mind there. And I have to tell you, I have some problems with some vision board thinking, right? Mm-hmm. When I read The Secret, and I thought in that movie, the big takeaway for me, which really bothered me because I don't believe in that, is that if you think of stuff, you'll get stuff. If you put a picture of a diamond bracelet, you'll get the diamond bracelet. And that car you've always dreamed of. But it's really bigger than that. And I always feel like people think stuff is going to fix their hole in their heart. And that's not what it's about. Explain what your feelings are about the vision board and how it works in your world and how you talk about that and Picture Your Prosperity.
We started this process with some actual brain science behind it. So there's MRI research now that shows if you think about raising your arm, for example, you actually stimulate the same part of your brain as when you actually raise your arm.
Mm-hmm.
And athletes have known this for years. It's well established that mental rehearsal is a really powerful tool.
Right.
So
get your head in the game.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Picture yourself with the perfect mm-hmm. golf stroke.
Right.
And I suspect you maybe have pictured a parking space and all of a sudden
heck
it's there
yeah.
for you, right?
Oh,
the
yeah.
parking angels
mm-hmm.
come and it's not
boom.
Only a good one, it's legal, it's convenient.
Yeah.
So this same type of work can happen for any kind of goal you have. And part of it is because you're stimulating a part of your brain called the reticular activating system.
Okay.
So it's at the base of your skull. It's about the size of the end of your pinky. And mm-hmm. what it does is it helps filter information.
Okay.
So like if you're at a party and someone's yelling Jen across the room, you hear that, but you don't hear the clinking glasses or the heating unit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So most of us are reactive with our reticular activating system. Like, have you ever had the experience you buy a new car and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you see it everywhere on the highway?
Totally, yes. Pam Grout talks about this in her books as well. You start thinking about something and it's that power of, your mentality is going in that focus, in that momentum.
Right. So that's usually reactive. Most people aren't leaving their house saying, oh, I wonder if I'm going to see a Volvo S80 today.
Right.
It's blue. But you can be proactive with that.
Mm-hmm.
So taking some of the mystery away from like the secret, the idea is if you put images on a board of things that you desire, and I want to come back to getting clear on what you desire,
mm-hmm.
but what you're doing is helping to stimulate your reticular activating system.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example. I have a big desire to go to Australia. I actually think I want to live there, even though I've never been there before.
Hello, past life. I digress. Go on.
So I have the Sydney Opera House on my prosperity picture. Well, mm-hmm. every time I hear an Australian accent, I like do a beeline up to that person and say, oh, where are you from? It's Australian, right? Not because sometimes I get it mixed up with New Zealand.
Yeah.
Which I'd also like to go to. I don't mm-hmm. think I want to live there, though. And so what I'm doing is, because I have that picture, it's in front of my attention, I'm listening differently, and then I take action.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the missing piece out of The Secret, right? It once in a while, like picturing at a parking space might be there, but usually it's using that, like our own good intentions to take action based on a thought we have, that intuition, that inner thought,
mm-hmm.
take action in the world, and that's really where the results show up.
Okay, so say on my prosperity picture, I put I have this same kind of thing. Like, I don't know which Carolina it is, but I just know I want to go there someday. You know, one of the Carolinas, like I've seen pictures in Home and Garden magazine and in Architectural Digest, and you see the porch and you see the wicker furniture on the porch and the lemonade on the stand, and you just want that so much. And I put that on there. So now what do you think, if I'm looking at my prosperity picture and that picture is there, how is my daily life going to start moving the momentum to get me this vacation somewhere in South Carolina? Like, how does it work?
Okay, so I want to take a step back and explain how a prosperity picture is a little bit different than a vision board.
Okay,
because I'm
going
to tell you where to put that picture on your board.
Right, because there's sections. So go ahead, explain that to our listeners.
So if you imagine a picture frame broken down into four sections.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom part are for images or goals or visions that you have that don't require much money.
Mm-hmm.
And the top part are for things that do require money. And the images on the left side are for things you want to happen 5 years or sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And the right side for goals that you have down the road.
Right.
So if you're, is it, you just want a vacation?
I don't know. I just am drawn to it. I would love to have like another home in one of the Carolinas for some reason, or access to it, or just, you know, be able to take it, explore it, sit there. Did you ever read the book Prince of Tides?
Oh, years ago.
Okay, yeah. Pat Conroy's book. I read that when I was a teenager and something hit and I just thought all these visions of being on the coast. And so that might not even be good. God, it could be in Savannah, Georgia, for all I know. I don't know. But I'm just saying somewhere with the sea and a wicker furniture. And I just feel so drawn to it. I can't explain it.
So what I'm loving is listening to you talk about it because I can tell you're picturing yourself there. It's awesome. You're putting emotion around it. So let's say that that starts with a trip there to see what it might be like. So maybe that requires money. So it's on the top half of your board and it's sooner than later. You don't want to wait more than 5 years. You want to do that sooner.
Right.
And so as you start to accumulate images up there, then you can, I like to think of it as a visual financial plan.
Okay.
So you can start to do your plan around, okay, what's it going to take to get to the Carolinas?
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe it's figuring out, okay, do you know anyone that lives there? What kind of trip do you want to have? So you know what actions to start to take.
Right.
I like to put an asterisk on my prosperity picture, this or something better, because maybe you're hired to speak there. So you don't have to pay. It all of a sudden, it's at the bottom of your board.
There
you go. It doesn't require any money. Or
getting paid to show up. How about that?
That's actually part of my Australia goal, too.
Is
it? A lot of money so Stephen, my husband, can come with me.
Perfect. Perfect. Give me an example of some of your clients where they've done this in their prosperity board and things have come true. Or for yourself, even. Or maybe a friend.
I'll give you an example for me, and this was a this or something better. So when our book was coming out, I had the New York Times bestseller logo on my board.
Right.
And the Sunday before the book came out, we ended up being reviewed in the mutual fund section, which wasn't even anything I thought was even a possibility.
Right.
And it helped push the book to the New York Times bestseller list. Like, all this stuff happened. And so that was a goal. When I did my next board, that wasn't actually on there anymore. Another example is also going through this process of really visualizing what those images mean for you, not just like slapping a picture up there, but just like you did, you said in all sorts of detail, is sometimes there's goals you didn't even know you had that show up. Or you didn't know someone important in your life showed up. So Lisa King, my co-author, did the prosperity picture activity with her husband, Tony, and there's an image of food. We have like 30 images in the book, but you could use anything from real pictures or magazine photos. And when he was telling Lisa about the picture, he goes, oh, that's when we have friends over for dinner in our house in L.A.
Oh. No,
they live in Chicago.
All right. Okay.
She's like, really? He goes, you know, I didn't even realize I wanted to live in L.A. He's a musician. So what I love about this process and comparing it to a traditional financial planning process where traditionally it's like, so when do you want to retire?
Right.
Where do you want to send your kid to college? Like, all important goals, but there's no juice behind that.
Right.
You really start to get to your why. Like, what is it you're really saving for? And it's so much more motivating for people than just someday down the road I'll retire.
How have people been reacting in your world since the election? Are they more relieved or more scared or a little combination of both?
I would say I hear more fear.
Okay.
And I would say in general around the money conversation, it's a money conversation around more fear.
Right. Right.
So most people have a lot of anxiety. They focus on the scarcity part of money, that they're not going to be okay.
Right.
Versus having abundance thinking, which is just having a core belief that everything works out for the right reason and that you are taken care of. And it's not like you're already rich. I do believe that, but it's just knowing that everything happens in the right time, in the right place. In the traditional money conversation, that's not what happens.
No. And a lot of people, too, because when the fear creeps in, they have this idea, a mindset that they have a goal, they have to get there. I don't know who planted it in their head. Maybe it was from their parents. Who knows? But it's there, right? And it's part of their landscape. It's almost in their brain wiring. How hard is it for you to unwire some of these brains to get out of that mindset? Because, you know, if someone's been knocking down a door, I mean, maybe you see this with some people and their children are down a path that's not proving to be productive or financially lucrative, right? Like, for example, I have a friend whose kid is an actress, very, very sweet girl, but I don't think has the talent because she's not even getting close. I mean, it's one thing if you're getting called back and you're put on hold and things are almost happening, but there's nothing happening. So it's probably time to have that conversation where we switch gears and say, maybe you go into production, maybe you go into, you know, teaching, maybe there's all sorts of things to look at. But sometimes the parents don't want to have that conversation because they don't want their kid to be mad at them and say, you don't believe in my dreams, you
know. They don't want to be a dream crusher.
Right. So how do you put that reality check into people so that they can start getting in the flow? Because I think sometimes our ego can get so in the way that, like for me, I remember I kept every day I had this vision board of I want to do a positive news show. And I know that it's not about, like, you know, white, fluffy, silly news. I mean, inspirational news, stuff that's groundbreaking, stuff that's making people feel good and blah, blah, blah. When I finally just let go and said, I want to be paid well for my time and my efforts and utilize my talents, instead of saying it had to be a positive news show, within 2 days I get a call to host a food and wine show. Okay. Is it changing the world? No, but it was a hell of a lot of fun. Got to travel around and eat and drink and be merry. It was great. So I think it's really hard to get people to understand that sometimes things aren't happening in the time that we hope it will because something better is around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah, it is hard. And so sometimes it's a conversation of having them remember a time that could have happened. You made a really important point about maybe it came from their parents. Mm-hmm. Our beliefs around money are so central to what shows up in our lives. And many of those beliefs, I mean, Bruce Lipton says our subconscious beliefs are formed from conception to age 7.
Mm-hmm.
When people think, oh, their kids are too little to understand a money conversation.
Right.
But if you saw your parents fighting about money all the time or describing people as like, oh, they're filthy rich or they're
That's such an awful term, by the way, and an oxymoron, right?
It's like, well, because why would you end up wanting to be rich if in the back of your mind you're thinking that they're filthy or that those people are dishonest?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's just starting to peel back the curtain and understand what our beliefs are and being aware of it. I caught myself once talking about someone and saying, oh, they're really wealthy, but they're really nice. And I'm like, what was that about? Like, they're mutually exclusive?
Right.
And I caught myself.
Yeah. I've said that too. I was talking about some friends. I was like, they're really wealthy, but don't worry, they're so normal. You know, it's like, wait, like the wealthy people are normal. It's like, I said, no, don't worry, you will really like her. You'll want to hang out with her and have a beer with her. Because you won't, those stuffy rich people. Right?
Yeah. So
where did this come from?
And when you have those beliefs about people with lots of money, like that would be an obvious when you really think about it. Well, then why would I ever want to be like that? Because I want to be a nice person and I want people to like me. So some of it's reframing. Like, think about the philanthropy that could be done with all that money.
Right.
Think about the world that could change.
Right.
You know, when you were saying money is a spiritual thing, you know, where I get really excited about helping people around their money and standing in their power around it is when I realized what good could be done once you get past the place of, am I going to be okay, to how much can I give?
Right.
The whole world will change.
Completely.
Every child will be educated, every person fed. Like, there's plenty of money to solve the world's problems.
Right.
It's just we keep ourselves so afraid we're not going to be okay that it's hard to make that change.
So for people who are listening, other than the prosperity picture, which you talk about, what other tips from the book can you recommend that people start implementing right now to get their energy flow shifting in the right direction?
Oh, it's my favorite tip. Don't tell the other tips.
Okay.
It's counterintuitive, but one of the best ways to bring prosperity into your life mm-hmm. is to boost your financial generosity.
So to give.
Mm-hmm. So imagine if you had your fists clenched, like hanging on so tightly to what you have, being afraid you're not going to be okay, like I can't give up what I have. Mm-hmm. How can you possibly receive when your fists are clenched?
Completely.
Now, on the other hand, there's people that are always giving. And because they might have some guilt or it's not okay to have money, that doesn't work either.
So it's got to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, but when mm-hmm. you can loosen that grip and start to help other people, some interesting things happen. So this isn't just a metaphysical concept, what goes around comes around, although I happen to absolutely believe that. Mm-hmm. Some of the research has shown that when you give to charities or causes or people that are important to you, your brain interprets this as saying, oh, I must be wealthy if I had that to give. Ah. So giving $500, you get the same kind of buzz as you would get getting a $10,000 raise.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is so interesting. Yeah.
And,
okay.
And another study showed that they had two families, the same demographic, same income level, same education level. The only difference was that one family gave $100 more that year than the other family. The mm-hmm. family that gave ended up making $350 more that year.
Mm.
If you think of countries like the United States that are very generous, we are.
Right.
We have higher GDPs than other countries, gross domestic products. Okay. So what goes around comes around, but it's also that you end up accumulating more wealth mm-hmm. by the mere act of giving.
So that's really important. But then you also have to have that knowledge of what's the right amount. Is there a right amount? A friend once told me that a good negotiation is one when both sides feel a little sick to their stomach. Because if one person's really happy, the other person's really sad, then that wasn't a fair negotiation. So what's like a fair amount to give based on the percentage of what the income is?
I love the idea of a percentage giving. Because okay. here's why. As your income goes up, mm-hmm. you proportionately give more.
Yeah.
And if your income goes down for some reason, you're not giving more than enough. Traditionally, in many religious traditions, 10% is the number.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do. I give 10% ever since I've been doing this. Business has been growing. Mm-hmm. But I would say give a percentage that feels right to you and start with something. Mm-hmm. So a strategy behind this is to set up an automatic, systematic giving plan. So I do this quarterly. You could do it monthly or weekly. I have 10% of my income going into a separate account.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it's given away. The interesting thing about this is I know what's in there, so I can be much more deliberate about my charitable giving.
Right.
So if I have a friend walking in a breast cancer walk, for example, I'm way more generous than I was in the past.
Because you know what you have.
Because I know what I have. Uh-huh. And I always feel like I'm giving them a standing ovation for their good work that right. they do in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there's a cause that's really important to my husband and myself, we can be really deliberate about what we have to give.
Right.
I also have taken our family on volunteer vacations all around the world using our charity fund.
Nice.
So I'm going to Ghana in a few mm-hmm. weeks to on another vacation like this. It's a really charitable work. So to me, using that fund has allowed me to reach a lot of different goals. Like I'm giving, I'm having an amazing experience. I gave my kids a great experience, and I'm making a difference in the world.
When you were doing research for this book, what did you find the most surprising? Like you said, there are a lot of scientific studies in there. What are some that, like the ones you've mentioned, are amazing? What other ones just roll off your tongue that you just find yourself telling people at restaurants?
Okay, so what's most amazing to me is the stuff that I knew intuitively that's proven out by science. So we know that gratitude is a good thing. Lots of people have talked about that.
Sure.
It raises your happiness level.
Mm-hmm.
Grateful people have also been shown to make more money.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Right.
Logical, right? Who wants to work for a jerk?
Right. This is true. But yeah, a lot of jerks rise to the top, unfortunately.
Yeah. But giving and gratitude are actually really smart prosperity strategies.
Okay.
So I loved that I could take these two parts of my life, like the spiritual part that believes in helping others and giving and visualization and meditation, and realize how they're actually really sound financial strategies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some other ones other than gratitude?
Meditation.
Yeah.
So I've been a meditator for 12 or 13 years now, every single day, at least 20 minutes, sometimes twice a day.
What? Okay,
minutes.
Now you're just bragging. How the heck do you do it for 20 minutes? I can't get through 4 minutes without freaking out.
I get up really early, okay. And I just do it.
Okay.
And once it's like anything else, Jen, it's a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, here's what I would say. If that sitting in meditation for 20 minutes seems like horrible, the important thing is to find a contemplative practice that calms you down.
Sure.
So maybe it's a walk in nature.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I do that all the time.
Maybe it's
breathing. And it's quiet, yeah. So I'm just moving, not sitting still.
The important point in terms of bringing it back to the money conversation is when you're freaked out about money, you make terrible decisions.
Okay.
You just do.
Fear is like standing in quicksand. You're going to sink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Studies on scarcity thinking have found like if people are really in a dire situation, really, really dire, mm-hmm. their IQ actually drops.
Wow.
So how can you get yourself out of a hole if mm-hmm. you're freaking out? So just even a breath.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just oxygenates your brain, calms you down, and that will in itself allow you to make better decisions or allow you to think about that person that might be able to help you get out of the situation
right.
that you're in.
Okay. So meditation, gratitude. What else? What else can we do while we're driving?
Oh, while you're driving.
Think of this as you're driving. I remember, I can't remember what section of the book it was when I was reading it, but that thought that if we all just lived on a little bit less per month, like if you thought for a second, can I survive on... Yeah. You know, 80% of what I make instead of the whole 100%, or I might be messing up the figure.
Well, I think what you're talking about mm-hmm. is that if you were to ask someone if they could save 10% of their income,
that's it. Yeah.
They might go, oh, no, I couldn't do that, mm-mm. maybe 2%. But then if I said to you, can you live on 90% of your income? They go, well, yeah, sure.
Right, right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
You need to be a money expert to know that.
Yeah, so
it's like playing. We're really goofy when it comes to money.
Right. Yeah.
I was an economics major in college, and we learned that money is a medium of exchange, and people are rational decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. I mean, now there's a whole field of study called behavioral finance that knows that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We're not rational.
No.
So using some of those ways that we know our brain is wired can just help.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to think of money in pools, like here's my kids' education money, here's my retirement money, here's my vacation fund.
Right.
So great, save in those different funds. Mm-hmm. Use the it's all money. It really doesn't matter.
Right.
But it helps us to think in those ways.
What are some other flow good energy things versus, I mean, I know somebody who literally every bill she gets, she just stacks them on the dining room table. She doesn't want to look at them. And then when the stack gets so high, she finally digs in. I mean, that just gives me hives thinking about it.
I felt nervous hearing you tell that story. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh no, what isn't she doing?
Yeah. Well, I, for years, I forgot I even did this. I'm sure I didn't put this in the book because I do it so unconsciously. Every time I write a check under my name, I write thank you.
Oh,
because I'm like grateful I have the money to pay for this.
Right.
Not like, oh, crap, I got this huge bill.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do that. But then I'm like, okay, I have the money to pay for it. Maybe I'll make a different decision next time.
Right, right.
So it's...
Oh, that's really good. Just writing thank you. I always heard that story with Jim Carrey writing the check to himself.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good strategy? Or is that an ego-driven, I want this money so that everything's going to be okay and I can buy the fancy car strategy?
I think it's part of the visualization strategy. He mm-hmm. was trying to get in to that place where he could actually picture himself
receiving
making $1 million
mm-hmm. right.
for, you know, for getting paid for that, which clearly he's done a lot better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the important part of using our brains as a visualization tool so that we can see ourselves in those situations and know they're possible. Not like lying, like I'm a millionaire right now if you're not,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I'm doing whatever it takes to create financial responsibility. Whatever you can get behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also important to make sure I know you know this, but sometimes we don't always remember to make sure it's in the present tense and say what you want and not what you don't want.
Correct. Or what, because even saying I want blah, blah, blah
yes.
kind of puts more want, I need
yes.
blah, 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 puts more need in the space. So it's like, thank you for
perfect.
Blah, 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 right?
Perfect.
The shifting of the gratitude statement versus the want and the need statement.
Yeah, because actually want is a word that means lack.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the more you want, like, I really want this. Great. You're going to keep getting wanting it.
Mm-hmm. Right. The want will keep showing up because it's just delivering what you're asking for.
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. So then if somebody out there is listening right now and they're like, well, I just want my husband to get off my butt because I bought a nice pair of jeans. You know, I know couples that have these kind of arguments and it seems so petty and ridiculous when you're talking about real life problems. Like, you know, we were just discussing the passing away of, you know, somebody you know's husband and your dog and my dog and I watched my dad die. I mean, those are real problems. Not can I buy jeans, but some people literally fight about that kind of stuff. You see it probably all the time, like a remodel or something. I mean, how can we come together, people?
Well, some of it. So part of it is getting a shared vision, right?
Okay.
So maybe it's creating a vision board together, sharing yours with your partner so you can get on the same page what joint goals are.
Sure.
And I would also say that fess up about money. Mm-hmm. Like there are a lot of secrets couples keep from each other. My husband and I don't. This is not an area that we typically fight about is money, thank
mm-hmm.
goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been learning that people like hide bags in their trunk that they don't want their partner to know they spent money on. Or they'll pay cash for things so it doesn't show up on the credit card.
Totally. I have a girlfriend who does that all the time. Anytime she shops for herself, she has to make it in cash so he can't say, why did you buy a purse? I couldn't imagine living like a prisoner like that. But it's a control thing or a fear thing or both.
Well, it's on both sides,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Like, so it's coming clean
sure.
about your money secrets. And mm-hmm. then it's also getting on the same page so you both
right.
feel okay about it. And it's not always easy.
No.
You know, and that is not an – I mean, I really think that sometimes that's when an actual counselor can help so you can – versus a financial planner. Sometimes people think it's just a money thing. It's not.
Right. I was going to ask you because I've talked with a financial advisor once before too. She says I recommend counseling a lot. Sometimes even hypnotherapy to get past these blocks because she's not a counselor and people seem to think she can be.
Or they think that's the answer. If I just had a plan,
mm-hmm.
but if there's not great communication happening in a couple, the plan's not going to make it better.
I had a friend that she was the one that was hiding the purses and then she would get so mad when her husband would go out to dinner with the guys, you know, like they would do sort of like an every couple week thing. So I'm like, look, I'm no shrink, but I could say if you could sit down with him and say, you go to dinner, I'm cool with it. I'm going to buy a purse every month or whatever, or give me this much that you're okay with me spending on myself in this category. So we stop yelling about it. And she was like, yeah, that'd be great. But in a perfect world, it would be fine.
But I think the important thing, you know, the interesting thing about that is what we put out, we get back.
Okay.
So, you know, there's judgment on what he's doing and it's not okay and whatever that is around.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this feeling judged.
Right. And then she's getting judged for the purses. And,
yeah.
And then,
so.
Yeah. It's a bad dance.
Yeah. I've been playing a lot with putting out the energy that I want to receive back.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. So
how's that working?
it's a really interesting experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm changing the story a little bit because I don't want the person
of
to
course.
Know I'm talking about
go
that.
Ahead. Go ahead.
But there's a exercise class I go to all the time, mm-hmm. and there's a teacher there that I really think doesn't like me, and it bugs me. I have a need to be liked.
Yes, absolutely.
and so then I don't like him.
Right, of course.
Mm-hmm. So I've been playing with when I'm there, sending loving energy to him.
Yeah,
like in just doing that because mm-hmm. I get that if I'm whatever way, whether it's an energetic thing or I'm showing up bitchier because I'm thinking he doesn't like me, it's just not working.
Right.
And once in a while, like all of a sudden, I did that once last year. All of a sudden, he came up and had this big conversation with me when I was like the ignored person in the class before.
Yay! Well, see, that's true. I mean, that's the whole energy thing. I don't know if you've read the book Zero Limits by Joe Vital, or some people say Vitali, but there's a section in there where he talks about a gentleman who does this kind of healing called Ho'oponopono, right?
I love that.
I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. So this guy prayed over all these names from a psych ward in a prison and basically healed the dynamic of the prison from remote praying for total strangers. And that was so powerful to me because I'm like, wait a second, what? So I have been like prayed to all of my to Chase, to BMO Harris Bank, to my mortgage company. I love you. I'm sorry, because every time I see the envelope, I kind of get that worried feeling. And I know putting worry out there isn't going to help. So it's like kind of ease into it. And thank the abundance for showing up and all the things, because I don't have a roadmap for the next 6 months. It's a scary feeling. You know, I'd like to know what's happening when and where and how. We all do, right? We all want to have our roadmap. But I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. Just like that mantra. And so I was out to lunch with a couple of friends and we had the bitchiest waitress on the planet. And she was awful. And I'm like, and so then my one friend was being awful back. I'm like, stop. She's responsible for our food. She's going to spit in our food if you keep being a bitch. Stop. We don't know what happened in her day. We have
That's right. No idea if her parents
just got diagnosed with cancer or boyfriend just dumped her. We don't know. So let's not take it personally and go on from there. And then I said, and you know what? Let's just send her some love. Like, let's just picture her having a great day. Let's just put love from our heart to hers. Let's turn on our heart light. Send it that way. My one friend's like, you are so weird. I can't even go to eat without you pulling this crap. I'm like, well, welcome to my world. So here we go. We did. And she came back over and she was like, do you guys need anything else? And she said, no. She's like, okay, I thought I heard you call my name.
That's so cool.
We're like, no, we're just sending you some love from our heart rate. You know, it's like, whatever. But it works. I mean, it's the intention. Because if you keep hitting the tennis ball over the court, you're keeping the game in play. You're hitting back. Think about an argument you might have right now with somebody in your life. And you're building up to like, what am I going to send back? You know, it's like, you can't. Just let the ball fall out of play. And don't hit back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for financial world, you know, it is all about hitting back. It is all about the positive energy, and it is all about having those strategies, because being organized around money is just like being organized in your closet and being able to find your shoes. You have to do it, don't you?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I had someone I was talking to say, stop telling me to be organized. I'm never going to do it. Tell me something I'm going to do.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it depends how you define organization.
Okay. Got it. How about having awareness? You don't have to be organized.
Clearly.
Just have an awareness about what you have and what you don't.
For sure. You have to know, to do any kind of plan, you have to know what you own and what you owe.
Right.
And what's flowing in and what's flowing out. And the flowing in and out thing is really challenging for people to figure out, because they're afraid to. They underestimate it. The word budget is like the word diet. Right. It's like... So I actually don't think they ever work for anyone.
No.
Once in all the years I've been a financial advisor, I've seen one person say, oh, I spent less. I spent more on food this month, so I'm spending less on clothes. I mean,
right.
No one does that.
Right, right.
So what I prefer instead is something called a prioritized spending plan.
Right.
So that's like you get to plan what you're, how you're going to spend
how
your
you're
money.
Spend, instead
that's
of a budget.
Fun,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. And you can build in there what you want to give. And, and because you have your plan, you know what you want to save for these different goals that are really important to you. So it's not all spent
today.
Mm-hmm. And so the tactical things, you know, I'm glad we're talking about both, because the visualization is hugely important. And we live in a material world.
Right.
Saving is huge. This is painfully obvious, but one of the best things you can do to create financial security is to spend less than you earn.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And people don't do it. Mm-hmm. But when I see over and over the people that I've seen that are absolutely on track for their goals, yeah, once in a while they've had some big inheritance or sold a company for a lot of money. But most of the time it's that they're awesome savers. And it doesn't matter how much money they make.
Right. Right.
It doesn't. People think it does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you know, if I made $500,000 or $1 million, I'd be able to save a ton. Yeah, maybe. But I've seen people make that much and spend more.
So when I had a shift happen with my employment, you know, I was a member of this gym, and it wasn't a fancy pants gym. It was just like, you know, $60 a month for this gym, which is still pretty decent. It's not like it's East Bank Club, $200 or whatever the heck. But I started hearing people talking about Planet Fitness, which is $10 a month. And I'm like, that, like, my entitlement brain just couldn't go there. I was like, that must be the worst place ever. You know, just, I just couldn't imagine that a gym could be $10 a month. So finally I sucked it up and I went, it's awesome. It's clean. Nobody's ever there. Nobody's posing. Guys aren't moving weights and sounding like they're lifting furniture in a living room. I mean, it's fabulous. I am so happy at my $10 a month gym. I can't even tell you. But my entitlement and my ego wouldn't let me go there.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. And I also love that there's lots of ways, like, so if working out is important to you, that you found ways that there's ways to do that might look different than you're doing now if there's money you want to be spending in another place.
Right.
So it's very thoughtful too.
Mm-hmm. So and now, also, yeah, instead of 60 a month, I spend 10 a month, and then I could put that 50 a month into my I want to go to Italy someday fund.
Great.
Which is my, which would be in my bottom right corner.
Probably, well, it depends when the someday is. It would be up on top.
Up on top, and
either
top right.
If it's 5 years down the road, then it'd be upper right.
Probably. I want my son to be able to be old enough to really enjoy it. I mean, he's 10 now. He'd probably dig it, but he'd dig it more when he's 15 and plus.
Yeah.
Okay. What are some other goals that you have that you, you know, that you hope to see manifest so that when they come true, we can have you back on the show and we can talk about it?
I was thinking about one this morning, actually. Driving to the gym this morning, mm-hmm. I heard these people who've been traveling for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And on my upper right-hand quadrant, I have an airplane. And that represents taking a year off and traveling around the world.
Very good.
I would love to do that. I love travel. Mm-hmm. You know, this and something better. Maybe I'll get paid to speak in all these places.
That's
and do
true,
that.
Too.
But if not, you know, then I'll plan. It's part of the plan.
So last night I was having dinner with a couple of mutual friends, and one of them said that she'd only taken 14 vacation days the whole year. And, I mean, that's all I was allowed at the Tribune for, you know, all the years I was there. You get 2 weeks, and that's it. Why do we have such a fear of, you know, how can we change that model? We need universal health care, and then we need siestas and vacations.
Yeah, and we're like the only country in the world that doesn't realize the benefits of taking a break.
Yeah, it's true.
Think about when you can unplug and unwind, how much more energized you come back mm-hmm. to your work with. I don't know.
Right.
I it's this weird work ethic we have here. Like the more you work, the cooler you are.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. And then what? Then you're tired and you're not taking any trips.
Right.
Yesterday, I had heard that we were maybe going to break 20,000 or what ended up happening. I like to tune out the news a lot of times because it usually makes me so depressed. But where are we right now?
We're still hovering.
We're still hovering. We're close. Yeah, it hasn't happened. Is that something that people in your world think is a good thing or just a I can't believe this is a happening thing?
Well, I will tell you, in my personal world, I think so long term for my clients, it doesn't mm-hmm. really matter.
Right. Right.
Right. You want to have a plan that makes sense in the long run mm-hmm. for you. You were talking about people being worried. I got an email this morning with someone like so freaked out about the market. And and I looked at her plan. I'm like, you know what? You're going to be fine in the long run. Yes, there will be a dip. We've had an up market for a bunch of years. There is going to be a dip. I don't know what it's going to be related to,
mm-hmm.
but it just happens. Markets go through cycles. And so you hopefully have enough cash cushion.
Right.
That you can withstand that for anything that you have coming up and that you've got a long-term view on things.
And for cash cushions, what should people have in savings where they could live in case the catastrophic happens?
So the old rule of thumb was 3 months living expenses. And after 2008, people are like 6 to 12 months. And what I say is the number that makes you sleep at night.
Okay.
Because I don't want people yeah. worrying about their money. I really don't.
Right.
And, you know, maybe they're not going to earn a lot on your cash, but if it keeps you from making a bad decision, you know, I remember phone calls in March of 2009 when the market was the absolute bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Get me out. I can't lose another penny.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I can't promise it's not going to go down. It was like right. the worst time to sell.
Yeah.
But if you have enough cushion or you know that your upcoming expenses are covered,
mm-hmm.
then hopefully you can
leave it there and it'll come back.
Yeah. yeah. Or, you know, have a thoughtful plan around it.
So the buying and the renting debate, I just want to ask you this before we let you go. I've been a homeowner for a long time and recently switched to being a renter. And I have to tell you how much I love the fact that if something breaks, I call a landlord and it's not my responsibility to replace the furnace.
Right.
And I just heard that mortgage rates are going to be going up. Is renting still, I mean, so many people still have this thought that it's just throwing away money without giving you an asset. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it depends. Even before the 2008 housing crash,
mm-hmm.
I always thought it depended. Renting gives you the ability to be more nimble. You can mm-hmm. move. You don't have to worry about it. People tend to spend less money on their place, right? If you're renting, you're not going to fix it up the same way if you owned your home.
Sure.
On the other hand, owning allows you to build some equity. You have stability. Mm-hmm. The thing, if you're renting, your landlord could go, sorry, mm-hmm. you're out.
Right.
So as you get older, you probably don't want to get kicked out of your
no. yeah, yeah, yeah.
place you're living. So mm-hmm. I think it depends. I've never thought it was like so stupid to rent. I've mm-hmm. never been like that.
Right. Right.
But I think owning can make sense, too.
Yeah. I've been an owner for a long, long time, and it's just nice to take a hiatus.
Yeah.
All right. Picture Your Prosperity is the book. You need to have it if you don't already. What's your Twitter, Ellen, for people to follow you? Are you a big tweeter?
I'm not a big tweeter, but
okay.
you can find at Ellen Rogin, ELLENROGIN.
Facebook as well.
Same mm-hmm. thing, Ellen Rogin.
Perfect. And your website?
guess what?
EllenRogan.com. I must be psychic. Ellen, thanks for being on the show, and thanks for doing all that you do, and keep being the abundance activist that you are.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jen.
My pleasure. I'm Jennifer Weigel at JenWeigel.com, and we will see you next time.